This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
There's a threat on the horizon so deadly that experts warn it could wipe out 9 in 10 Americans. The Pentagon, a former director of the CIA, and the American Society of Civil Engineers are all sounding the alarm. But nobody in the mainstream media is listening. This event has the potential to cause economic collapse, mass pandemics, and the complete and total breakdown of the food supply all at once. I'm talking about our nation's vulnerable and crumbling power grid. Fox News warns our death toll would be staggering if the grid goes down. I want to tell you about a free video that has everything you need to know about this threat and how to protect yourself. Watch it now at blackoutvideo.com. Go to blackoutvideo.com and watch this controversial video right now. If you want to survive power failures and blackouts, you need to see this video. Go to blackoutvideo.com now.
Now, spreading freedom across the nation, this is 3, 2, 1.
The Buck Sexton Show.
Team Buck, welcome to the Freedom Hut. Thank you so much for joining. As always, excited to get down deep into all the topics of the day. So much show today, so little time. We're going to be covering all sorts of things. I wanted to start, though, with something that's, I haven't really gotten into in a while. And that's corruption. Corruption's always worth talking about. Corruption is something that subverts many of the goals we have as conservatives who believe in freedom. Corruption is a legitimate enemy of the state, an enemy of freedom. But if we're going to talk about corruption in general, I think we might as well start at the very top. Because you see, the Clintons are really in a class of their own. And the latest revelations about the Clinton Foundation shouldn't really come as very surprising to any of you. And I'm sure it doesn't really surprise any of us. The numbers are new, but the basics of it are things that we would have expected, that the Clintons are for sale, really, and that their enormous global enterprise is largely about the sale of influence, political influence in this country, and just influence as a result of celebrity. And this is important, by the way. There's so much time that's been spent in the past few days on whether or not President Obama loves his country. And at this point, there's no real debate worth having there because you've either figured it out and you've made up your mind or you haven't. I mean, you're not going to change anyone's mind in year six that President Obama has some issues, you could say, when it comes to how he approaches America. But remember, this is a president who's on the way out. He doesn't have that much time left in office. And you'll see it soon. It won't happen for a little while. You'll see it soon, but there will be a switch of some kind that will just all of a sudden take over the news cycle. And there will be nothing but 2016 stuff that we're discussing. It'll just become the new dominant part of the news cycle. The Clintons matter because Hillary Clinton is not just the heir apparent for the Democratic Party, but there's a sense, certainly among the media, that she's the next president of the United States, and she should be the next president of the United States. And the in the tank for Obama stuff that you saw in 2008, they're going to run the same playbook for Hillary. It won't have quite the same excitement and frenzy, I think, but it's going to be very close. It's not going to be far from that. So let's just start to lay the groundwork now for our understanding of just who this is, or who they are, really, because it's tough and maybe not worthwhile to talk about one without the other at this point. The latest from the Washington Post on the Clintons is that they have accepted millions and millions of dollars from foreign governments via the Clinton Foundation. They've accepted millions and millions of dollars from foreign governments while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. So they've created this vessel, you see, this sort of separate entity. It's all about charity. And I'll talk a bit about this notion that very famous people who set up charitable organizations are really, they're all about the children. Yeah, they're all about saving people. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the Clintons have accepted millions of dollars from foreign governments. And in one case, clearly, according to the Post, violated an ethics agreement they have with the federal government. So how can that be, by the way? How can you accept any money from a foreign? How can something so directly tied to an individual and directly tied to, in the case of Hillary, her future political fortunes, as well as funding much of her very lavish lifestyle, by the way, probably don't hear about this that much, but the Clinton Foundation has spent $50 million on travel for employees. How much of that do you think was going to sort of the lower end of the spectrum employees who are actually just doing their jobs day to day versus how much went to Hillary, Bill, Chelsea, the CEO now, apparently, and their top cronies, all former Clinton officials, by the way. Tens of millions of dollars spent a number of years on travel, and I'm sure on hotels and on food. This is funding a sort of new level of a global elite lifestyle under the guise of it's all about the children. You see, it's all about feeding kids, and I'll get through some of the issues that they say they tackle, and I'll put those into perspective for you, too. But understand first that when we talk about the Clintons and the possibility of violating, or rather at this point, according to the Post, the reality that they violated the ethics agreement, this was a carve-out. They made a corruption carve-out agreement so that the Clintons could continue this organization while Hillary was Secretary of State. It said that they could continue their important philanthropic work around the world while avoiding conflicts of interest. So they're allowed to do this. Who signed that special deal, by the way? Just let me just ask you, just take a moment, see if you can guess. Valerie Jarrett. Remember all that stuff about how the Clintons and the Obamas are all, there's all this animosity between them? No, that's all gone now, especially after Obama won term two. Now Obama understands that for his legacy to continue on and for what he did in office to be meaningful, he needs Hillary to essentially cover his political flank. He needs Hillary to be there to continue on the progressive pieces that he put into play. But for example, the foundation, which signed off on by Valerie Jarrett, so it's got to be all good. The foundation says that they should have sought approval from the State Department in 2010 after they received $500,000 from the Algerian government. Because Algeria is all about the kids. Has nothing to do, I'm sure, with the fact that Algeria saw a huge surge in its lobbying efforts in D.C. at exactly the same time because it was trying to, sweet talk the U.S. a little bit on its human rights abuses.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a problem. So there are also, when you look at the donations from countries to the Clinton Foundation, remember, this is like if I set up some entity that's, you know, doing good works, right? Of course, they could just raise money and send it to the American Red Cross. They don't have to create a foundation in their name and use that as the vessel for charitable works. There's tons of charities all over the world. There are people who actually do this full time, and this is all they want to do, and they dedicate their lives to this. It's not a self-aggrandizement project, which is what the Clinton Foundation largely is. But no, they want to run it, and they want to use it for their own purposes. As was pointed out in a very good book by Daniel Halper, Clinton Inc., which I read when it came out, this is part of their branding effort. I mean, the whole Clinton name has become a company, Clinton Inc. But when you look at the donors to them, remember, this is important because there's not going to be any opposition to Hillary in the media. So we need to start understanding now exactly who these people are. You'd think we would know, but it was the 90s, man. I mean, you know, people forget stuff. Plus, they had the media covering for them then. The Clintons would not be the Clintons if the internet had existed, by the way. And if people had been able to actually do research, and if there had been more archives of what the Clintons were really all about, no way they would have been able to achieve what they have in office. They were receiving, while Hillary's a Secretary of State, the highest diplomatic official in the United States, the Clinton Foundation was getting money from, for example, Saudi Arabia, which gave tens of millions of dollars. Clinton Foundation was getting money from Kuwait, from Qatar, from Oman. A lot of rich Sunni Arab monarchies there. That's interesting. They've raised $2 billion since the creation of the Clinton Foundation in 2001. And of that, at least $50 million, right off the top, of course, went just to the travel budget. Who knows where else the money's gone. Some very highly paid former Clinton advisors, by the way, are part of this charity. Oh, yeah. I'm sure they're earning every penny. They've now tried to fight against this by saying that whenever somebody contributes to the Clinton Foundation, it goes towards foundation programs that help save lives. That's Craig Manassian, who's spokesman for this foundation. Let me tell you something. I know a bit about nonprofits. I have some friends who have worked for real nonprofits. And the Clinton Foundation is much more concerned with the Clintons than with really helping anybody. I'm not saying they don't do good things. They have to do good things in order to continue to build this global brand. But in many cases, charity is actually just an excuse to build one's personal brand. You see this with celebrities all over the place. Why do you have to start a charity in your name necessarily when you could, of course, just contribute to charities that are already doing good work full time with no conflicts of interest for the same cause? Why do you have to create your own look at how awesome I am organization? Now, I'm not saying that people can't do this and that there aren't private citizens who want to endow something in their name or what have you. But for the Clintons, it's more than that because it's also part of their pursuit of political power. And they use this, the shield of we are helping people around the world. So who's really going to question us when in reality this is a massive global business? $2 billion raised over 14 years? Sounds a lot. When you think about, though, what other charities in place are already doing, for example, the Red Cross's operating budget every year is $3.5 billion. So the Clintons have raised $2 billion over a little more than a decade. So you can start to space that out and see what we're talking about. And by the way, in 1 year, they actually spent the foundation into the red. I guess the champagne at some of those galas was pretty pricey. But then when you look at how the Clintons are actually directing this money, or their senior advisors, or whoever's actually running the show over there, they're tackling obesity, economic development, climate change, women's issues, children's issues, general health issues. Let me tell you something. $2 billion around the world doesn't get you to first base on any of these issues. This is all about the Clintons. If it was about other people or helping people, there are better, more effective ways to do it. But this has been a way for them to rebuild their brand after the scandal of the 90s. This is the celebrity version. This is the celebrity version of doing good works for others, which is really just good works for them. $50 million on travel. $12 million in 2011 alone on travel. That's a pretty pricey budget. They only have a couple of hundred employees. But flying private all over the world is pretty important, I guess. That's what they think they have to do.
Buck Sexton, The Blaze Radio Network. Phone the Sexton Hotline, 888-900-3393.
Team Buck, I think it would be a safe assumption for most of us that the prospect of an Iranian theocracy with nuclear missiles would be unsettling, that this is a very serious issue, that this would create destabilization across an already very destabilized Middle East. I don't know. Some of you would probably say how much more you can throw as much gasoline you want on that fire. It's already burning red hot, but it could always get worse, I promise you. As I've said before, always make room for crazy when you're talking about the Middle East. And you should also have a second corollary. It could always get worse. And I think Iran getting nuclear missiles would almost certainly make it worse. And we should be unified on that one issue of concern as a people and certainly with our allies as well. Keep in mind that there's also the shift in military strength and the shift in capability that would occur, not just because of the Sunni Arab monarchies that would decide that they also need nukes. You'd have an arms race in the Middle East now. And you'd have the Saudis probably asking the Pakistanis, hey, how do you get this whole nuclear missile thing going? And we would have a proliferation race. I think that's very likely. And you also would have all of a sudden a not nuclear parity per se, but a nuclear threat from Iran against the state of Israel, which obviously has nukes. And that always looms in the back of the minds of those Middle Eastern states that might otherwise consider an all-out attack on Israel. Remember, Israel is very small as a country. It could not absorb any sort of nuclear strike. Even one would essentially decimate the whole country. And so, and I know many of you point out that decimate actually means 10%, but it could destroy the country. But so you think we'd be agreed on this, that this is something that goes beyond politics and that we don't have to sort of sit here and have the usual petty back and forth. But that's ridiculous, Buck, because this is the Obama administration. And if you're talking petty, these guys are number one. If you're talking about, oh, giant egos and massive narcissism, you're talking about the Obama administration. There's all this nasty, snippy back and forth between the administration and Netanyahu right now. And you have U.S. and Israel, two staunch allies that are having the sorts of acrimony that can have long-term consequences. This could actually be a real issue. This could actually hurt some cooperation going forward. I'm not saying it will, but it could. This is the kind of stuff that we don't need, especially over this. The administration is talking about the propriety of the prime minister of Israel coming to speak to Congress. There's nothing improper about that. And by the way, you know what's improper? The president thinking that he and he alone gets to make foreign policy. Congress has a role in foreign policy. And by the way, treaties are part of that, as are sanctions. And if he's going to do what he says he's going to do, he needs Congress. Obama needs the Congress to sign off on relaxing some of the sanctions. So he can't just cut them out. So isn't it okay for Congress to get a little more information on this? To hear Netanyahu's perspective on this? Who do you think knows more about Iran? Netanyahu or Obama? But here we are. We're seeing classic Obamaism on display. It's all pettiness and narcissism. And Obama thinks that he's going to just get away with doing this negotiation, irrespective of what the Congress believes, including Democrats, by the way, who realize that this is an issue. But I also want to tell you something that's not coming up in the press very much, but there's an undercurrent here that you should keep in mind throughout all of this back and forth through spokesmen, you know, they sort of taking these snide little jabs from one side to the other. Israel saying, hey, can we just come here and talk? The administration just needling them and being nasty. And there's obviously a personal rift between Obama and Netanyahu, and it's probably because Netanyahu realizes that Obama is somebody who never should have had this job in the first place, and he, unlike many of us, doesn't have to pretend otherwise. So you have that. But the undercurrent here is that the Democrats can't be seen as caving. They can't be seen as caving to Iran because of Hillary. If they sign an incredibly dumb deal. Now, remember, there are Democrats in the Senate and in Congress who are worried about this. I'm talking about Obama as the leader of the Democratic Party, which he is right now. This could be a problem for Hillary. This could be an albatross for Hillary. A real issue. Because if a bad deal gets signed, all of a sudden when it comes time for 2016 and Hillary wants to talk about all her foreign policy expertise, her party will have been the ones, and President Obama before her will be the one who decided to essentially just set the runway so that Iran can take off into the nuclear stratosphere. That's an issue. And so now you have two competing sides within Obama. On the one side, it's his narcissism, his belief in his own brilliance, which who knows what that actually is founded in. And on the other, it's I can't hobble Hillary too much because she has to protect my legacy. If Hillary doesn't win, Obamacare is toast. President Obama knows that. So which is it going to be? He's trying to play it down the middle. And in the meantime, when we should be focused on stopping Iran from going nuclear,
it's all about how Netanyahu's being rude.
What a joke.
You're listening to Buck Sexton, only on the Blaze Radio Network. This is the Buck Sexton Show.
All right, Team Buck, let's take a couple calls here. Jason in D.C., you're on the Buck Sexton Show. What's up, Jason?
Hey, Buck, I wanted to describe what the Clinton Initiative is. And this is kind of very popular amongst the ultra-rich. Now, remember, the Clintons are going to be, Hillary Clinton's going to be richer than every Republican candidate put together. Okay? What they do is this. When you have a lot of money, you can't pass it on to your heirs because you're going to get slammed with the estate taxes. Now, is it more important to own General Electric or be able to control General Electric? Because remember, if you're the president of General Electric, you can use the company jet, you get to spend money, you get to hire your friends. So,
this is what I was saying, Jason. This is exactly what the Clintons are doing. This is their own personal private jet service around the world, pays for all their meals, pays for lavish hotels, allows them to give jobs
All deductible. So they're doing the exact type of money type of schemes that they always lambast everybody for. The only difference is it's for their cause. And this is, I mean, look, the Johnson & Johnson Foundation, Bill Gates does it. You know, and what they don't understand is Chelsea Clinton just recently quit her job doing whatever it was because she feels her time's best devoted to helping the foundation. No, it's called, I can make a hell of a lot more money working this angle we have than anything else that's out there. And this thing can go on in perpetuity that forever they will give. I mean, you know, let's not kid ourselves. Hillary Clinton getting paid $300,000 for giving a speech, okay, and to the metal recycling. You remember the one where she got the shoe thrown at her?
Yeah, of course.
The point being is nobody's asking the right question. This is called, I'm giving you a bag full of money. Except I'm not stupid enough to give you a bag full of money where we can get into trouble.
Right. It's a carve out. And for these governments, this is what's so obvious. Do you think the countries care about whether, you know, kids in sub-Saharan Africa have drinking water? No, they do not. They're giving money to the Clintons because they want influence with the Clintons, because they know that even with Hillary not in office, they have a lot of sway in the Democratic Party, which runs this country right now, and that she's likely to be the next president. I mean, this stuff is obvious. It's so on our faces, and that anyone pretends otherwise is laughable.
Well, but that's the idea, though. It gives them a legitimacy that they're you know, acting in the best interest of the country. It's called keeping your wealth. I mean, think about this. I would love to have – you're better off having $500 million in an endowment fund that you and your heirs can use forever. Because remember, they all want jobs. What's Chelsea Clinton's daughter or son or whoever going to be? Bet you they're going to work for the foundation. See, so it's all about the cash flows.
Right, and by the way, it's also a way, Jason, for Hillary not only to build a brand, but for her to essentially be campaigning around the world with the tax breaks of a charity. That's the whole point of
absolutely.
This.
Let's not kid ourselves, okay?
This is a tax-free campaign vehicle. I'm sorry, go ahead,
absolutely.
Jason.
But I mean, in addition to that, Newt Gingrich was part of the entire thing too. You know, remember when he got $1 million from Fannie and Freddie for giving historical advice? That's called a bribe. Okay?
Yeah.
There's no amount of historical advice Newt Gingrich could have given Fannie and Freddie that
you will get
them
no defense.
$1 million.
You will get no defense of Gingrich's ethics from me, my friend. Zero. So yeah, I thought that was absolutely smelled to high heaven. And what the Clintons are doing smelled, but the Clintons now, the problem with them is that we're almost all sort of in a state of, we're also beaten down by how corrupt and slimy and morally, deficient they are, that it's hard to even generate much outrage when they do more ridiculous things like this. So I'm with you. The Clinton Global Initiative is so, first of all, the notion that you're going to pick 10 different things to focus on. Yeah. I know it sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money for people to travel and dine out and throw parties. But if you're going to tackle global obesity, it's going to take a lot more than, oh, let's call it $200 million a year raised. A lot more than that, my friends. And that's one of about eight major areas.
These things, I want, you know, how about this? If you're really such a great organization, why don't you open your organization up to a full audit so that we can see where the money's spent? Because remember, we had a number of problems with charities in the past where you donate a dollar and only 10 cents is going to the actual cause. The other 90% is going down rat holes.
Well, Jason, you and I see eye to eye on this one. So I'm glad you called in, and thank you for lending your voice to this thing. Look, I'm with you. I think this is just a total front, and it's an outrage. And of course, the shield is that it's for charity. It's all for the children. Yeah, right. They could raise money. You know, they could attach themselves to another global charity and just been ambassadors for it and raise a lot of money. But then they don't get to control the travel. They don't get to give jobs to their buddies and all this stuff. This is a business. They are operating a business. This is not a charity. This is not driven by the desire to help the less fortunate. Let me give you a perfect example of the kind of stuff I'm talking about. When it comes to celebrity charity and charity as a means of personal branding. By the way, the problem with this is this gives real charity, like charity that you would do on the weekends to help other people, or the check that you write to an organization that just spends money to help as much as it can with the money that it has. It gives that sort of you're less trusting of that now. Because you see what happens to some of these. This is from the New York Post, and this was just a couple of years ago. Tina Brown, who used to be the editor-in-chief of the Daily Beast, according to the New York Post here, she raised $1.2 million for some charity that was her charity for the Women in the World Foundation. $1.2 million. She gave out a total of $10,000 to actually charitable purposes that year. She raises $1.2 million. She spends $10,000 for charity. Okay, think about that disparity for a second. And then you say, oh, well, maybe they just were trying to build up even more and more. Well, no, because they gave $10,000. She gave $10,000 to charity in 2011 while raising $1.2 million. And she threw it one party, just one. I mean, there were other parties as well. One party cost $168,000. Party for her and her friends. A tax-free party is what that is. Don't be naive, my friends. I know you're not. I know you know what's going on here, but don't for one second let them pull the wool over your eyes. This is a front. It's a joke. It's ridiculous. And people need to call this out. This is really just a means of evading taxation, by the way, as well, which I wish we could all evade, or at least pay a flat percentage. As you know, I wish there either was no income tax or we could pay a flat percentage, but this is just a tax dodge, really. It's a way to throw fancy parties for your friends. You can either write the check yourself, or you start a foundation, raise money, and then pay out of that. Big party. Absolute, absolute joke, and it's really wrong, and it's unseemly, it's slimy, it's dishonest, it's gross, and all of those adjectives apply directly to both of the Clintons. Both of them. This guy had 8 years in office, and now she thinks she's going to have 8 years in office? If this is the best we can do, my friends, whatever befalls this country, we deserve. If this is the best we can do, I don't even know what to say. We've had, think of all the people that are doing amazing things in this country. Think of all the veterans who have served and who have incredible, not just courage and bravery and an understanding of actual public service, what it really means to serve your country, but also have picked up so much about the world and how it functions and our enemies and our allies. And no, we can't have any of them. No, we're going to have Hillary Clinton as president running around giving speeches for $300,000 a pop with this giant project of branding and self-aggrandizement. Clinton Global Initiative. And all these people know that they can either they're buying into one of two things, influence or celebrity. Either they just want to be close to the Clintons to be cool, and yes, adults still want to be cool, or they want to buy influence in the U.S. government. And they're being, increasingly, you see, they're able to do this. Foreign governments. There's your foreign money in American politics, my friends. Forget about Citizens United and the lies they told us about how that's going to open up the floodgates. All right, Greg in Seattle, we got about a minute and a half. Go for it.
Hey, Shields High, Buck.
Shields High, sir.
I am outraged that we could trade or whatever we're doing with Iran in good faith. This is completely insanity. As a veteran, I was in the surge in 2007, and 50% of our casualties then were because of IEDs coming straight from Iran. I don't see how we can trust somebody that doesn't have any of our interests in mind. And to think that the Obama administration is just blowing this off like it's not a big deal. Veterans are outraged. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, like, I'm glad you're pointing this out. And I remind every chance I can on TV. I said this just a week or two ago on CNN, that they were the main driver of casualties for our military in Iraq for a long period. And while we're talking about an agreement that there are buddies in these nuke talks, they're literally chanting, as of yesterday, death to America. They're hanging Obama in effigy. They're burning American flags, or as the Iranians call it, Tuesday. That's what they're doing. We're going to make a deal with them? Greg, this is crazy.
It's absolute insanity, and just another, nail in the coffin for how this administration feels about veterans. They give they don't really care at all, Buck.
I hear you. Greg, thank you for your service, and thank you for your call. Team Buck, back in just a minute.
Buck Sexton will be right back.
The Blaze Radio Network. Buck Sexton.
We know who Jihadi John is. At least that's the latest reporting that we can see today. This is just breaking. Jihadi John is Mohammed Emwazi. He was born in Kuwait, but he grew up in London. He was raised in a well-to-do family, and he went to the University of Westminster. And then he decided to travel to the Islamic State in 2012. Jihadi John, as I'm sure many of you know, is the individual who has appeared in these grisly beheading videos, including the beheadings of U.S. journalist Stephen Sotloff, British aid worker David Hange, British taxi driver Alan Henning, and American aid worker Peter Kasich. So we know who he is. And this is, of course, going to, or at least we believe we know who he is. We could be wrong, but my sense is that if this was leaked by the security services to the press, they have a pretty good sense that this is the guy. This then will get us into a discussion over why would someone like this do that? Forget about the beheadings for just a moment. Why would somebody from London, who grew up in London and who knows one of the premier liberal Western states, personally, one of the real most important countries to Western civilization, why would he decide to travel to Syria to fight alongside the Islamic State and then become among the grisliest? Although I have to point out that while he's the one wielding the knife, all of those who set up the camera and who are a part of this process are equally morally culpable for these beheadings. Those who hold the captives. The Germans, I believe, are actually now prosecuting a Auschwitz guard who's in his late 90s. So just being a guard there, just being involved in the beheading process makes you culpable and guilty in exactly what that act was. But we know who Jihadi John is, and now we'll have all these debates and discussions about why would someone like this go join the Islamic State? Because it's about jobs, right? Because they don't have jobs, or because they are in societies that are that allow them to be disaffected, or they feel separate from. No jobs in the UK. It's a pretty wealthy place. And he comes from a wealthy family. So yet again, we see here that the real model of the jihadi is not someone who comes from some impoverished, depressed, tyrannical place and who shows up. When we're talking about foreign fighters who travel, we're not talking about people that have lived lives of deprivation per se. No, we're talking about the elites. Globally speaking, they're elites. And in some cases, they're elites in any context. Bin Laden, others like him. So you have this Mohammed Emwazi character who is now among the most wanted men in the world. And we have to start talking about why would someone join. And now you have to get into the ideology, because clearly there's an ideological component here. And I was talking just yesterday on CNN. Why do people join the Islamic State? They join because
They believe what the Islamic State says. They believe that this is the creation of a caliphate. There are many new converts to Islam who find themselves pulled in by the allure of recreating the glory of the 7th century in the Arabian Peninsula. That's what they think they're doing. A small army of true believers that will reign supreme over all those who stand in its way. A small army of dedicated servants of God, which is what they think they are, who can murder and rape and pillage and do as they wish in the name of God, because that's what they're supposed to do, as revealed to them in their revelation through the Quran and through the hadith of the life of Muhammad. The Prophet Muhammad, not Muhammad Emwazi. This is about people who are idealists for evil, revolutionaries for rape and pillage. That's all it is, my friends. We can try to come up with root causes. We can try to come up with, well, it's because of what the U.S. government did, or because of colonialism, or we can just accept that the Islamic State has believers.
Buck Sexton, the Blaze Radio Network.
Spreading freedom across the nation. This is
the Buck Sexton Show.
Team Buck, we are in hour two, so we can sort of, you know, loosen up the tie or take off the shoes and put on some slippers if you're at your desk. That's a neat trick, isn't it? You should try that one. I used to do that one sometimes. It's good. But we can sort of settle into a couple of more topics. I'm aware, and I just saw this now, the breaking news, the FCC approved the internet regulation package. And that's so disconcerting, and this is a problem. Now, this can be reversed, or there are ways that we can make all this turn around, I think, hopefully, maybe. But I don't want to get too deep into that now. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow. I want to spend the night really, really pulling apart the guts of this regulation and get a real sense of, first of all, what's in it, because, hey, they passed it, so we can find out what's in it. They didn't pass it. They just mandated it, by the way. This is government by bureaucrat. This is just a federal agency diktat telling us exactly what can be done, exactly how we'll do it, and we have no recourse. Once again, we have no recourse. I also, by the way, was seeing that now, and this was via Breitbart, now the number... We're talking about federal agencies and by diktat, and you have the president, of course, standing behind his whole executive amnesty. And I think Breitbart is saying, Breitbart.com has it up that you can be eligible for $35,000 in money from the Treasury if you're an illegal who's covered under Obama's amnesty. So the Treasury is going to be sending a few million people, possibly, $35,000 who don't pay taxes and aren't allowed to be here under law. Just we should all just remember that when we get audited and when we're put through that hell and that completely capricious and indifferent, deep examination by bureaucrats, that if you're here and you're not even allowed to be here and you're here and you're not paying taxes, you're not filing, you're earning income in the U.S., but you're not filing because you're an illegal. Now, people say, oh, well, some of them file. Okay, some of them file. A lot of them use fake Social Security numbers, which is also a crime, by the way. But a lot of them don't file at all. But you can get a check for $35,000. So there's that. That would be nice. I could really use a check for $35,000 cash from the federal government. That would be cool. That would really help out. That would help me pay some bills. Maybe I could expand from my 300-square-foot palace to 350 square feet. Oh, what's up, suckers? 350 feet? Booyah! Some of you are like, yeah, my closet's 350 feet. I know. Welcome to New York. I'm not going to start singing Taylor Swift now. I have some good news for you, though. I'm not just going to pile on the bad news. I have some good news for you. I was, as you know, rather energized and irritated over this possible prosecution of a retired teacher in New Jersey, a retired school teacher who was arrested because they found a 300-year-old flintlock pistol in his glove box. Remember, these are under this is how crazy this country is now. The federal government can pass a law to protect you from the state government. State governments can ignore it and get away with that. And that's OK. So or if a state government passes a law that protects you and the federal government decides it wants to do otherwise, they can override it. And that actually is within the framework of the Constitution. But the point is, the federal government doesn't have any constraints on its lawmaking ability anymore because of the interpretation of the Commerce Clause. So anything that you do, anything that could conceivably come up, they can cover if they choose to. So you can't have any protection from the state. All you have is liability. All you have is legal liability from states and from the federal government. You don't really have any protections anymore. That's the America we live in. You can't even raise a good faith defense or a mens rea defense. Or look, this is I am just waiting for the opportunity to get in a public forum. Maybe I'll get them on radio, speak to some of these conservative senators out there. And I want to ask them, you know, why, if you can pass the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, for example, which creates a clear statutory framework for the protection of sincerely held religious belief, essentially a companion to the First Amendment Free Exercise Clause. If you can do that, why can't you pass a federal statute that says that if you are in a position to raise a mens rea defense, i.e., you didn't know that you were arrowhead hunting on federal land, you thought you were on private land, then a reasonable person could have made that distinction. Or you didn't know that throwing fish overboard could violate some sort of international treaty obligation or whatever. Whatever it may be. There are plenty of cases where a reasonable person would not know, and where the federal government is using interpretation to decide that you have violated something. And if you did not intend to do anything criminal and you were not reckless or negligent, that should be an affirmative defense for every federal charge. I want Ted Cruz. I want Mike Lee. I want Rand Paul. I want them to tell me or tell anyone who would raise this why they can't do that. What principle? That's supposed to be the underlying principle over all law. This goes back to English common law, but we've totally lost that now. We have strict liability. We have strict liability for a legal code that's so large and so all-encompassing that no one even knows what's contained in it. It's kind of just open to, you know, whatever the prosecutor thinks. It's tyranny, my friends. Tyranny with a capital T. There are worse tyrannies, but it's still tyranny nonetheless. And I was going to give you good news, and look at that. I just switched right back into bad news. Buck, you're going to give them some good news. Hey, I got the good news for you. Okay, so this New Jersey school teacher who's arrested, the prosecutor dropped the charges. Now, I'm sort of two minds about this. Of course, this is what I was saying should happen, and I'm glad that in this case it did happen. But that this even was a question is problematic for me. That the police even arrested him and that this wasn't dismissed right away. There is a federal statute that supersedes any stupid, piddling little New Jersey law that says that you cannot regulate this as a firearm. For legal purposes, this is the equivalent of having a toaster in your glove box, okay? You cannot regulate this as a weapon. And New Jersey goes, hey, sorry, you know, we're going to regulate it. Come on, forget about it. It's like New Jersey, unacceptable, unacceptable. But they've dropped the charges against this guy. But the fact that Van Gilder, this retired school teacher, faced even the hint of charges from the onset is incredibly problematic and is completely out of bounds and just goes to show you that you can literally show up to, you can show the cops. See what you're telling me here? I have in my hand the federal criminal code, the statute that protects me from what you're doing now. And they go, sorry, buddy, New Jersey state law here is going to reign supreme in this instance. It's like, no, that's not how it works, actually. I mean, if I were him, he's probably just happy that he's not facing a felony charge for this. But if I were him, I would sue. I bet you could make a case here. I would sue. Why not? But he's probably just happy the prosecutors tabled this. He faced 10 years in prison and the loss of his pension. So he would have been in jail for 10 years, in prison for 10 years, possibly, and they would have made him a pauper for this under law. I don't know. You know, I got some people said, oh, well, you know, this is just one case. No, it's not just one case. This sort of thing happens across the country all the time. I don't like sitting around and hoping my number doesn't get called by the government. I don't know about you. I don't like that.
I like to know what the rules are, know that the rules are fair and will be justly enforced, and that's it. I don't like to sit around and go, well, you know, you'll probably be okay. Well, the capricious enforcement of laws is absolutely the heart of tyranny and oppression. And now we just sort of, well, you know, we got a lot of federal programs and there's lots of welfare and there's some good stuff the federal government does for some people, right? So maybe we should just forget about this. This is all a lie. And we can change it. We can change it. It should be that forget about trying to repeal all the stupid laws. You'll never get there. What you need are protections enshrined in federal statute that cover all laws. It's not even the case right now that if a federal prosecutor, by the way, or prosecutors in general, but particularly federal ones, engage in egregious misconduct, that they can be personally sued. They essentially have complete immunity, including when they have not disclosed exculpatory evidence, which they're supposed to do. Why do we have that? Well, why do we have to have the balance so tilted in favor of the government? Why do we have a 90-some-odd percent conviction rate via the federal government? We have hundreds of thousands of federal cases a year. Most of them never go to trial, but those cases, when you add them all up, you've basically the government always wins. You want to live in a country where the government always wins? This government that has people standing up there saying that DHS is going to fold and we're all going to be, the terrorists are going to win if a few of them have to go without pay for a few days and they'll eventually get back pay? All that would happen if the Republicans allow that. See, I was going to go happy and I keep getting diverted here into, so this guy's not going to jail. But all that would happen if they didn't fund DHS is that people might start to realize that, hey, Democrats who campaigned against amnesty are standing here and filibustering DHS funding because they're so dedicated to amnesty. They're liars. They're liars. And we're finding out more and more now that Barack Obama is just an enormous liar on any number of issues, including his support for traditional marriage in order to get elected. And he evolved on the issue. Now they're so confident in his legacy and in the positioning on this issue, they say, yeah, well, that was just all, he just said that. That was just all a ruse. What kind of principles does a man have who can completely subvert his principles for the purposes of getting elected? Doesn't have any. It's just all the pursuit of power. And that's what Obama's about. I think we are going to have to talk a little bit about net neutrality. It just passed. I was thinking maybe it could hold it tomorrow. We'll talk more about it tomorrow, but net neutrality just passed, and so now it is a reality. And we're also going to be able to see. We're going to see what's in it. Get ready for it. Obama is essentially doing a giant end run on legislative authority. And once again now, they have brought the purview of the FCC into the executive branch, and they're supposed to be separate, but of course that's not what happened here. You know what? Let's talk about this a bit. Give me your thoughts on the FCC reg. What you think is going to happen here? Especially if you've got anybody with a tech background or who can speak to some of the technicalities, please do call in. We'll give out a couple of T-shirts. How about that? We'll sweeten the pot a little bit with some gear, some free swag. Yeah, 888-900-3393. We're giving out a couple of T-shirts. Let's talk net neutrality. Back in a minute.
Buck Sexton.
Taking intelligence to a whole new level.
The Blaze Radio Network.
Get your Team Buck T-shirt at theblaze.com.
Remember the end of the Superman cartoons? There was a period at which they said they were doing the last Superman cartoon. It was really just a promotional thing, I think. But I remember I went to a birthday party, and they handed out the final issue of Superman as a party favor. And I remember on the very last page, there was, I don't remember, like, it actually, I wasn't hugely into comics, though I always liked the X-Men a lot growing up. And before that, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I was a Raphael guy, obviously. But, because, you know, Raphael doesn't roll with authority. What's with that teacher's pet, Leonardo? Somebody need to tell that guy what's up. But on the very last page of the Superman comic, I remember there was just sort of one, it was the caption was, "This is the day that a Superman died."
I read that and I was like, wow, that was brutal. Well, my friends, it may in fact be the case. I don't know if people would write the epitaph just yet, but this is the day that the internet died. The more I think about this and the more it sort of dawns on me as our reality, it's quite clear that this is one we didn't really see coming. Those of you who are with me here in the Freedom Hunt every day know that I spoke about this weeks ago, and I wish I had the kind of platform where Senate staffers are terrified at the notion of me criticizing them and what have you. We're working on it. But we did what we could here to get the word out, certainly, and in the Blaze more broadly, and Glenn, and all the really big the big reach that we have when you put all that together. Try to get the word out here as much as possible. But in a sense, it didn't really matter because they have the bureaucratic pathway to do this, and they were going to do it anyway because they realize what's at stake and they realize how important this is. You see, Democrats really don't like, particularly for the purposes of politics, they don't like the internet. The statists and the authoritarians out there, the progressives of the Democratic Party, they don't like that we can pull up all of Obama's various lies. They don't like that it's easy to show clips of Hillary Clinton completely backtracking on what she says or changing her mind on a whim, or just being able to create blooper reels of Joe Biden to show that if you want to talk gaffes, Bush has nothing on Biden, my friends. Now, we know that from the internet, despite what the media believes. But there's such sweeping implications of this FCC regulation, and I've been thinking about this for weeks, and we weren't able to stop it. What's interesting is that with so much focus on other issues, and particularly with the Islamic State, and to some degree I've been trying to think about whether it's too much, whether we've been too focused on ISIS, while there have been sort of machinations from behind the scenes here, we didn't see this thing coming. The debate was over net neutrality, and then, while we were watching that hand, the other hand said, presto, voila, here is internet regulation as a utility. That was never talked about. That was not what the promise was. The promise was net neutrality equals keep the internet the way it is now. And what they gave us instead is, this is the internet brought to you by the federal government. Can we change this around? I don't know. We'll have to wait at least until you have a Republican who wins. And imagine if Hillary wins, which I think the odds makers would put as at least 50-50 or better at this point, probably better than that. You think after 4 years of Clinton or 8 years of Clinton, it's going to be even possible to try to undo the damage? I don't know. I'm not sure that it is. You're now going to have a bunch of federal bureaucrats who, as we know, are subject to pressure from inside the government, particularly from people like the president, Barack Obama, and from senior advisors. You're going to have them deciding what's an acceptable internet speed. You're going to have them deciding what's a fair cost. What are fair business practices? Remember how I try not to use the word fair here because it has been so abused by this administration and is actually usually a cover for you do what I say because it's fair. When President Obama says fair, it's you do what I tell you to do because I say it's fair. Notice their preference for fair over just. It's never just justice. It's always social justice or economic justice. It's never just justice because you need to modify the term justice if you're a Democrat, because it doesn't mean enforcing understood norms and always with the underpinning of morality. No, it means, you know, different things at different times for different people, and we decide. We decide. And justice is not something that is. It's something that's created. It's a construct. That's the Democrat view of it. That's going to be applied now to the internet and to the FCC, by the FCC. Party line vote, 3-2. Implications of this are huge. What if they say you have to be licensed? You have to apply. You have to tell the government now that you're going to set up a website. What if they determine that some companies are engaged in unfair business practices because they're so dominant and so ahead of the competition that they have a
de facto web monopoly on whatever. I mean, there's so many ways this can go bad. And does anyone really doubt that it will? I remember even before cell phones, I remember in the pre-internet age, being away at camp. I used to go to basketball camp and soccer camp and tennis camp, you know, those different sports camps. And, you know, calling my parents, right? You know, you'd call, and I remember just thinking, how could this be so expensive? This is ridiculous. Why are the charges so high here? Why am I paying dollars a minute to call California or whatever the case may be? Not that my parents lived in California, but you get what I'm saying. And it's because the government was involved. And they were enforcing monopoly. See, monopoly is only possible, really, in this country with the complicity of government. And those who think that the Obama administration is going to protect us from the internet provider behemoths, and those who think the Obama administration is going to make this better, are just delusional. There is no historical backing for that. There's no reason to believe it. These are the people who brought you the Obamacare law that's such a travesty, they won't even let us know what it's going to be. 888-900-3393. We're taking FCC calls. Back in a minute.
Buck Sexton, The Blaze Radio Network. Sexton, only on the Blaze Radio Network.
All right, team, the broad voice is open. We're taking calls. We have, it's 888-900-3393. We have Lynette in Florida. Lynette, you're on the Buck Sexton Show. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I did the hard job of calling like 48 senators yesterday. It was interesting. I started with representatives and I said, what can I do? And she gave me another senator in Florida. They seemed to be surprised that I was even attacking net neutrality as far as an issue, or if they hadn't even thought it through. And I went through each state, and I got to California. That was the interesting part. They said, this line is reserved for constituents. I said, I used to live there. I got family members there. I said, this affects everybody in the United States. And I said, you need to hear what's going to happen or what could happen. Anytime you let something go through that it's not, that no one's read, that's a red flag right there. I said, that's where I said everything that you just said and more about bits of information and how our TV is going to get slower. I went through everything and then I made them listen.
All right. Well,
obviously it didn't do any good, but
Lynette, you got to keep fighting even if you don't win necessarily. And I'm glad that it's good to hear people like you are taking the time and the energy to actually try to do what is available to you. But of course, the FCC appointees are not subject to the voters. And so there's really no accountability. There's no checks and balances on what they do beyond the executive branch. And clearly, President Obama's executive wanted this. They got it. And now we're going to have to see if it's even possible to untangle this in the future. I'm not sure it will be. Lynette, by the way, if you would like a T-shirt, please stay on the line and we will send one to you. We'll hook it up. Thank you very much for both for calling in and also for your efforts to try to block this regulatory monstrosity. Even though we didn't win this time, we got to keep going. Let's take Ken in New York. Ken, you're on the Buck Sexton Show.
How you doing, Buck? Nice to take my call. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
One of the things I was thinking of is that once the government gets their hands in on the internet, it's going to be able to prevent guys like me. I'm not in the computer business, but I have the capacity to put stuff up on the internet very quickly without anybody getting in the way. I think in terms of the conservative groups looking for nonprofit status, going up against Obama prior to his election, they're going to be doing stuff like that where they prevented them from getting that status. If a guy like me wants to put up a quick website against what the government's doing, I'll have to satisfy all kinds of rules and regulations that they just won't approve.
Yeah. Look, they're going to have the issue here is not what they have done so much as what they can do now because of what they've done. I know that's sort of tautological, but I'm just saying
they're going to prevent, like when the Obamacare law came out, I knew nobody read it. I did read it. I read it, and I videotaped myself reading it, and I put that up on the internet so people could see how absurd it is. Now,
well, yes, but this is the point. The point here, I think, Ken, is that to some degree they've given themselves vast authority over the internet, just as they gave themselves vast authority over healthcare, and so the discretion is in and of itself problematic. I can't say that they're using this to tax the internet yet. All I can say is they've given themselves the ability to tax the internet, and of course we can infer from that that there will be taxes and fees, and because this is what government does. They're saying they're going to exercise forbearance. That's the term. They actually recognize this. They're saying, okay, no, we're going to exercise forbearance, so we'll have the authority. This is the promise that the FCC is making. We will have the authority, but we all know the internet's like really cool, so we're not going to use that authority. Bull crap. There is no way the government's not going to use that authority.
They will use the authority, and they'll use the authority to information getting out that they don't want. So instead of being able to just whip up a quick website and putting it out there in 2 or 3 days, they'll put a whole laundry list of regulations and rules and requirements that's going to be impossible to get through, and they'll just prevent the normal person like me from doing stuff like that.
Well, Ken, thank you. If you want a T-shirt, you were the second caller we got here, so if you want a T-shirt, stay on the line. We'll send one to you. Thank you very much for calling in. Go to theblaze.com/shop. You can pick up Freedom Hut T-shirts there, Commie Bear in black, original Team Buck T-shirts. They got all kinds of good stuff there, as well as a full line of gear from 1791. I have a coat from 1791 that I need to take a photo of and show you guys. It's pretty cool. They're doing some great design stuff down in Dallas. All right, let's take we got every single line is lit up. Obviously, you guys care about this issue, and I appreciate that. We'll knock these calls down. We'll take them. Let's do it. We have Ben calling in from Canada. Ben, you're on the Buck Sexton Show.
Hey, Buck. How's it going?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I just wanted to point out something that I haven't heard that much in this argument.
Sure.
Being in software, it's always important to, look ahead to see what's coming up. And right now the big thing is, bigger movies, better quality. I mean, they're quadrupling the size and the quality of movies. Netflix is going to start streaming 4K. And then after 4K becomes mainstream, then 8K is going to come out. So there's always going to need to be more data for whatever it is that you're trying to get, right? Games are going to get bigger too, and these are some of the biggest files that go on the internet. Netflix takes up a third of the internet. Once you quadruple your file sizes, it's going to take up even more. And when you have a pseudo-monopoly turn into a guaranteed monopoly, all credibility goes out the window because these companies have no incentive to give you more data or better speeds because they aren't accountable to anyone. So what you're going to see in the future is lower speeds or even just stagnant speeds. Like, you're not going to get any better speeds, but you're going to need more, and they're going to start to cap you worse.
Right. They're going to be deciding what is fair for speeds, what is acceptable for carriage, for the carriers for speed, but also how much bandwidth you're allowed. I mean, they will have total open season on regulation for all aspects of web speed. And that, we know, speed is everything for the internet.
That's right. And in the future, it's only going to get worse. But the sad part is people are probably going to misdiagnose the problem and say, well, it just hasn't gone far enough.
Yeah. No, of course. No, then it will just be a question of, it's like communism. We just didn't implement it correctly. The FCC take over the internet. Yeah. It just wasn't done correctly. That's going to be the problem. Ben, always good to hear from some of our brethren up north in Canada. Thank you very much for calling in. Let's take one from Tammy in Kansas. Tammy, you're on the Buck Sexton Show.
Tammy? Decision. Why should we be hopeful for America's future and for what little freedom we have left?
Oh, you're sorry. I didn't hear the very beginning of your. You're just asking me why should we be hopeful for America's future?
Yep.
I don't know. I might need to have a. I should probably go and take a few deep breaths before I answer that question. I don't know. I think that this is. We're going to have to see how this plays out. It's obviously really disconcerting, and the web is now media. That's what's happening, and that's already more or less what's happened, right? The TV is now really web-based. It's all digital. Everything is digital, and everything is on the web and through the web. And so control of that is essentially akin to, you know, 30 or 40 years ago, control of radio airwaves, of TV, and of print simultaneously. So by doing this, the government will have given itself the ability to completely regulate every medium of communication and of the mass dissemination of ideas in one fell swoop. That's what this is. And this would, you know, when people talk about the fairness doctrine, that was for radio specifically, right? And they wanted to use this as a means of essentially dictating content on the radio airwaves, because conservatives, when people have choice, conservatives dominate because there's so few options in part for conservative media, right? So when someone has the choice of picking something that's conservative, they do that. And that's why the radio has been so essential to the rebirth of conservatism in this country starting around the time of Reagan. But at least it was only for radio, right? I mean, this is opening the door to the fairness doctrine for every method of communication and putting the government at the controls of that communication. And we know where that's going to go. I mean, Tammy, why am I hopeful for this country? I could talk. I can't speak about it without sounding sort of like a politician on the stump. But, you know, Americans are good people. We have a great history. We still have the Constitution, even though it's not adhered to very much. We still have the idea of America and of the ability to engage in self-rule and also the rights of the individual as the foundation for the entire state. But we're losing it. This is not good. I don't know what to say. And if Hillary wins and this stuff continues on, it will be too far for us to actually turn around. But Tammy from Kansas, thank you for calling in. Good to hear from you. I'm worried. I don't think the future is looking so great. I wish I could think of something that was particularly, I don't know. I'm going to think about that one a little bit. We got a couple more calls. We'll take them on the flip side of this break. 888-900-3393. The FCC has broken the internet, my friends. Today is the day that the internet died. Back in a minute.
You're listening to Buck Sexton, the Blaze Radio Network.
What team are you on? Get your Team Buck shirt now at theblaze.com.
That's right, rocking air guitar in here. Sorry you guys can't see it, not on video right now, but it's got a little oomph to it. Put some hot sauce on that. I like it. All right, let's take, we have Robert in North Carolina. Robert, you're on the Buck Sexton Show.
Hey, how's it going? My wife wanted me to give you guys a call and let you give you a little bit of my take on what was happening with the internet speeds and the way that the government's trying to stick their nose in everything. We lived in England for 4 years. I'm active duty military. We were there from 2008 till 2012, where the government already controls everything. Their socialist agenda is taught from kindergarten, you know, on up through death. Your internet speeds, when the government controls everything, they go down to nothing, and you pay through the nose for it. The taxation, the way that they handle their business, it doesn't matter if you pay the premium, the most amount of money for the fastest speeds, or you try to get in on the ground floor and get the cheapest speeds. Everybody gets regulated and dropped down to the slowest possible pace, and it's at the government's discretion of whether they want you to have that service or not. And it's really terrible. I mean, it screws up businesses. It messes up. You can't even stream like your show. We couldn't even listen to your show over there because until it was past midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, we couldn't get online.
Well, that is an affront that we cannot abide, my friend. That is completely unacceptable, obviously. No, I appreciate hearing the perspective of what it's like to deal with this stuff overseas. I had a friend.
What I'm saying is, Yes, sir. That's what I'm saying, is that's what's coming. I mean, their government has a stranglehold on everything, telecommunications.
Oh, no, I understand. I'm saying we should, just as we should on economic issues and spending, learn from the mistakes made by our European brothers and sisters. What we see now is that, the Internet is going to go the same way. And I see exactly the point you're making, and I think you're totally spot on. And I also say thank you for your service, Robert. Thank you very much.
Well,
thank you for calling in. Thank you, sir. Let's take Mark in Albany. Mark, you're on the Buck Sexton Show.
Just to give you an idea of what it's like to live to run a business underneath government, try being a truck driver with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, micromanaging everything from when you sleep, when you wake, how you fuel, where you drive. Every aspect of us is micromanaged at the administrative level.
Huh. I didn't realize there was such heavy regulation on trucking, but it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, I can totally believe that.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me give you an example. There's a representative from Iowa, Bruce Bailey, back in 2012, proposed a rule saying, hey, let's increase the insurance that they have to carry from $750,000 to $4.3 million per accident. That'll make anybody rich. That just makes us driving targets for fraud and everything. Look, the bill was shot down. Then he went up against Joni Ernst in Iowa for Senate, and then he was shot down. So now as a private citizen, he now lobbies the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration to administratively do what Congress and the people have already said no, and it looks like they're going to get it. And all that does is every one of your listeners that's a truck driver expects a $3,000 wage cut or something, because that's about how much it's going to cost us truck drivers to cover all of the extra lawsuits or the extra insurance that we have to carry. Right now, I think a civilian vehicle only has to carry like $100,000. Why do us trucks need to carry $4.3 million?
Right. No, look, anyway. Regulation is not benign, and it has enormous costs. And every calculation of it shows that those costs are going up all the time. And we need to start. Mark, thank you, by the way, buddy, for holding for a while. I know you're on hold. I appreciate it. And thank you for calling in and listening to the show. We need to start understanding this is money taken out of our pockets. This is money that we don't have. This is money that could be in your bank account, but instead goes to the Treasury or goes to various agencies of the federal government. And money is time. We're going to be talking about this a lot as we approach tax day, but you know, you're working 2, 3, 4 months of the year, depending on how much you're paying in your tax bracket, for the government. You're literally showing up, and you might as well have Uncle Sam there saying,
Do you think you could come in on Saturday? And, I'm going to need you to come in on Sunday as well. I'm going to take my stapler back.
All right, Team Buck. Diane, call tomorrow. Sorry we didn't get to you. We ran out of time, but we'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, Team Buck, go to Facebook.com/Buck Sexton. Like that page. My man Jay Severin is up next. I'll be with you tomorrow. Shields high.
Buck Sexton.
On the Blaze Radio Network.